Hello, everybody. Welcome to Ruby Rogues. Today on our panel, we have Luke Stutters.
Hi.
And we have Matt Smith.
Hello.
And I'm John Epperson. And today with us, we have a special guest. We have Takashi Kokubun. Did I pronounce that reasonably well?
Yeah.
Okay, sweet.
Hey, folks. This is Charles Maxwood, and I just launched my book, The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. It's up on Amazon. We self-published it. I would love your support. If you want to go check it out, you can find it there. The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. Have a good one. Max out.
Takashi, would you mind telling us why you're famous? Why people know about you?
So these days, I'm maintaining the feature of the Ruby called JIT Compiler, which is abbreviation of just in time. And that's a feature to optimize the Ruby, the script itself. So instead of optimizing the Ruby virtual machine, which is running, interpreting the bytecode of the Ruby scripts, we also added another way to optimize the Ruby, and which is a way to optimize the bytecode into the native code and just calling the native code by the native machine. So because it can eliminate the way to run the virtual machine, like program counter on the stack pointer, which is just a virtual thing to the Ruby virtual machine, we, instead of using the VM registers to native registers, because we can use the native registers by the native code, we can optimize the Ruby code further by implementing the Ruby methods as a native machine code. We can now unblock many optimizations on the Ruby interpreter of the CRuby. So I've been implementing that for about 3 years now. Since Ruby 2.6, I introduced that feature. I've maintained that, and I've continued to optimize the JIT compiler further. And I sometimes talk at Ruby conferences about that. So I think I've been known as a Ruby JIT compiler implemented.
Gotcha. And all of this is related to, I don't know if we're calling it 3x3 or 3x3, but basically trying to make Ruby 3.0 three times faster or whatever goal.
I called it 3x3.
All right, there we go. I don't actually know the official thing for it, but it's all kind of related to that, right? Like we're busy trying to make Ruby faster.
Yeah.
Sweet. Can you tell us, where are we at on that? Maybe give us a little bit of a rough idea of where we are.
So the goal in detail is that Ruby 3 wants to be three times faster than Ruby 2.0. And because since Ruby 2.0, we added many optimizations in both VM and the JIT, we are at least faster than 2.6. 2.7 is faster than 2.0. So when thinking about what times faster than 2.0, we need to think about which benchmark we are using. And there are multiple benchmarks to measure the performance between the latest Ruby and 2.0. And the first one is one called OptCarrot, which is just a NES emulator, Famicom emulator, running on the Ruby interpreter. And that's not an actual production use case, like REST applications or Sinatra or whatever, web applications or middlewares written in Ruby. On the other hand, it's written or using purely running on the Ruby virtual machine. So it can measure the Ruby's pure performance at least, like not using the I/O or not memory intensive. So for OptCarrot, we've already achieved like 2.5 times faster in JIT compiler. And virtual machine is, I don't remember the number, but at least JIT is making it significantly faster than virtual machine. So so obviously JIT is a part of Ruby three times really faster thing, major strategy of it, but we are still not there for three times faster yet. Some of our experiments are achieving better performance at the JIT compiler. So I'm hoping, or at least I'm thinking possible that we can optimize up to the three times three faster using JIT compiler. But my other focus, or my main goal of the JIT compiler, is that we want to optimize actual production performance, like Rails application, for example, because in my company, we are running the Rails applications on production servers. And if Rails applications can run faster than other older Ruby versions or virtual machine, we can just turn on the JIT compiler to reduce the number of servers, for example, or improve the user's experience by reducing the latency of one single request. So it's instead of too much focusing on the opt-carrot optimization, I switched the gear to optimize the Rails or Sinatra or web applications instead. And in from 2.7 and in that 3.0 development, I'm currently focusing on such kind of web application benchmark improvement. And therefore, I'm in 2.7 or at 3.0, opt-carrot performance are not so implemented yet. But if I need to somehow achieve the goal for 3x3 faster thing, I maybe focus on opt-carrot improvement. And then I think I can achieve that by focusing on what's slow in opt-carrot instead of what's slow in Rails or web applications.
So the opt-carrot is a Nintendo emulator for playing games. I think it came out about 2011 kind of time, correct?
It's
getting on to 10 years old, I think. And that was kind of the same time as Ruby 2, yes? Mm-hmm. So the 3x3 goal is to make Ruby 3x faster than it was in Ruby 2.
Yep.
And it's getting there. But I've seen a few talks, and I think the consensus is to get it 3x faster, then we do have to make a kind of big change, correct? This is my feeling. I'm sure it's your feeling as well. So the JIT is one major change we can make. And I was just on the opt-carrot GitHub, and if you look on the opt-carrot GitHub, it has a graph, and Ruby 2 is benchmarked at 26 frames per second, and the latest MJIT comes in at nearly 49. So I think it's safe to say you've got a 2x increase already, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
But the same performance improvement you don't get the same speed up when you start using MJIT with Rails. How does it behave with simpler systems like Sinatra?
So situations are a little bit similar to Rails in Sinatra. Actually, I have a benchmark using Sinatra, but it's a little bit too simple, but still having the same kind of impact on the performance with JIT compiler. So to explain the background, I need to explain what's going on behind it first. So when we run opt-carrot, the opt-carrot benchmark parameter is to run the NES emulator for 180 or 60 frames per second. Frames for emulating the one single game. And it runs for, I guess, some seconds or tens of seconds, and it doesn't run for a long time. At the same time, we need to JIT compile the Ruby methods to a native core. And because JIT compiler of the Ruby 2.6 or later versions are using C compiler to generate a native core from the Ruby methods, we need to wait for the JIT compiler to finish generating the native code. And it takes about, when the method is simple, it takes about 200 or 500 milliseconds. And because NES emulator finishes us a little bit quickly for running the 180 frames, compile a lot of methods, and it can, I think in my computer, it compiles like 20 methods during the benchmark. And so it can optimize only 20 methods during the benchmark. And on the other hand, in web application benchmarks, I'm running the Sinatra or Rails for a while, because in actual production bench performance, we run the application for a while, and the long-term or long-running version or the performance after waiting for a while is more important than just a startup performance, because it's the dominating the performance of the actual server situation. So I wait for compiling all the methods before actually measuring the performance in the Sinatra Rails. And in actually, this is sort of impacting that in a bad way and also in a good way. One thing in a bad way is that when we are running the C compiler, it consumes some resources like CPU resources and memory. And because CPU caches are shared between cores, at least in the last level cache in a usual CPU cores, it somehow impacts the, this compiler impacts the actual Ruby interpreter performance as well. So it's usually generally faster when JIT compiler is not running. And so if we wait for JIT compiler to finish compiling the methods, it's generally faster. But on the other hand, waiting for JIT compilation means to finish compiling all the methods. And in Ruby 2.6, the number of methods to be cached at maximum was 1,000 methods. But since Ruby 2.7, we changed the default value to 100. So when we wait after the JIT compilation, there are 100 methods to be methods which are already native native code. And when we compile such kind of lot of methods, it becomes slower by either reason, which is CPU cache size, because the CPU cache size is very limited. So there are multiple levels of CPU caches in the CPU, like level one L1 cache, which is a little bit smaller than all other level caches, and level two and level three. And I don't remember the exact numbers, but even in the last level cache, level two or level three, which is usually some tens or hundreds of kilobytes. And on the other hand, the JIT compiler, when 100 methods are compiled, at least in Ruby 2.7, when 100 methods are compiled, the SNAT total code size on Sinatra is usually 1 megabyte. So it's obviously larger than the size which CPU can efficiently cache. So compared to virtual machine, bytecode running on virtual machine, bytecode is shared between all the methods. So CPU doesn't need to cache a lot of code for running bytecodes, but native code needs to be cached for each method. So the more we compile the methods, the more the CPU cache become inefficient. So we need to. So the reason why we changed the default number from 1,000 to 100 was for that reason. But in the Ruby 3.0, I improved the mechanism to reduce the code size from 1 megabyte to about 250-ish kilobytes. So that's more, at least it's improved. And in Ruby 3.0, our master branch, in the Sinatra benchmark, it's doing a lot better than the 2.7, but still, because it consumes extra 250-ish kilobytes of the native code, it's a little bit slower than the non-JIT version, but we still have lots of places to be code size redacted. So if we share a lot more code in the native code between the multiple methods, we can reduce the code size further, and I hope that can fix the problem of the slower being slower in the JIT compiler.
So to follow up on that, and more for clarification than anything else, you're saying that one of the things that you're trying to play with here is you specifically want to fit all this, everything that's JIT precompiled, right? You want to fit all that in Lcache. And so if it's too big for Lcache, we suddenly get a performance degradation, and we're just trying to fit underneath that line, more or less.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I think it's impossible to fit everything in cache, but at least we need to try major parts of the native code need to stay in the cache, at least for the hot path or very intensive parts.
Okay.
I'm going to embarrass myself here by talking about the stack, because I watched your talk, and it talks about the difference between using the stack. Mm. So we were in a situation where the JIT, the JIT compiler works very well on the opt-caret, very good. But when you use it with Rails or Sinatra, then it's not as good. The latest releases, see, it's about the same, correct? It's kind of, and the memory usage is the same, CPU is the same, but we don't want the same. We want it to be faster. And one of the things you talk about is the stack. Now, I, you know, being in the Ruby world, the stack is hidden from you. This is very much a kind of C thing. But my understanding of it is that in C, the variables on the stack are usually kept in registers. So if you can write an assembler program, a machine code program that only uses maybe 10 variables and all of those 10 variables are kept in registers, it's going to be incredibly fast, maybe 20, 30 times faster than the nearest option. But obviously you can't just have 20 and 30 registers. You have to have more. So you have to reach out into memory to memory that's outside of this kind of short list of 10, 20 registers, correct? So opt-caret, because it doesn't use a lot of Ruby objects, is using variables which can be kept in the stack on those CPU registers. And therefore, you get a very good performance increase with the JIT compiler. But Rails and Sinatra deals mainly with objects in Ruby, yes? The JIT compiler does not currently have a way of translating those objects into just registers. Now, that's my very vague and flawed understanding of what's going on. But is that roughly the situation?
Partly correct and partly incorrect. So let me fix some wrong parts. So the first thing is, in opt-caret, we don't keep all the objects using opt-caret on stack, but instead we just have that in heap. So when we create an object in Ruby, we usually create an object in the Ruby heap slot, and we refer to that from, for example, from a hash reference or array reference, and therefore we don't need to keep it in stack, or we can't keep it in stack, because when we read from the virtual machine stack or machine stack, it's not guaranteed to be not being referenced by other objects. For example, when we leave the method or when we stop using that one stack frame, this object could be used by other objects, and we wait for GC to remove such objects. And until that, we cannot remove the object reference. So when we need to have the object allocate objects on stack, we need to be sure that the object is never touched after the stack frame is not being used. So it's not usually possible for Ruby objects. And therefore, we just create that in a heap. And the thing is, even in opt-caret, everything can't be in the stack frame, and therefore we usually use two things. One is a local variable of the Ruby, and the other thing is instance variables. And local variables is actually sort of living in stack. So we have two different stacks in when we run Ruby interpreter. One is a virtual machine stack, which is kind of virtually prepared by virtual machine. So we have full control over the stack frame. But the other thing is a machine stack, which is created by when we call the C function, for example. So the native calls local variables are, for example, live here, this on stack. But because virtual machine also uses C local variables, such kind of internal variables are living in this native stack. And also we have a virtual machine stack. And Ruby local variables are obviously living in the Ruby VM stack. And we can optimize this Ruby local variable to native local variable if we implement the optimization in JIT compiler. And my first version or my first experiment of the JIT compiler was having that optimization, like changing the local variable Ruby local variables to C local variable so that we can optimize a C local variable to either stack reference or registers, as you mentioned before. So it's at least possible, but there are some challenges, like we have a local variable get method or binding object. And when we create a binding object, we need to capture Ruby local variables to a binding object. And therefore, we cannot assume that Ruby local variables are safe to be escaped to C local variables easily. So we need to kind of analyze, is it safe to capture the Ruby local variables is just C local variables or not? And that's the thing. I think we can implement to analyze such behaviors, but right now it's not prioritized well because I experimented that at least with OptCarrot, and it didn't contribute to OptCarrot's performance. So therefore, currently, JIT compilers are generating native code, which is just using Ruby local variables on stores that on stack, Ruby virtual machine stack. And we have some room for improvements on that part, and I'm going to revisit that again for reducing the code size, because we are currently doing that for optimizing Veritas Sinatra. But the other thing, instance variable. In OptCarrot uses a lot of instance variables instead of using the local variables, because OptCarrot emulates the CPU or NES, whatever registers used by the Famicom. So each of the virtual registers have the instance variables in it, and kind of OptCarrot is a very instance variable intensive benchmark. In C2B, instance variable have an inline cache. So virtual machine can optimize the inline instance variable access by inline cache. But the thing is, in JIT compiler, we have more rooms to improve the instance variable access by inlining the very exact index of the index instance variable in the single process. Usually, virtual machine needs to verify everything in the instance when we access instance variable, but in the JIT compiler, we can just inline the exact index of the instance variable, and we don't need to fetch it from memory, for example. And so when we JIT the OptCarrot, instance variable access becomes very faster because we implemented that for optimizing OptCarrot on other similar things, and therefore OptCarrot becomes fast. And this is similar in other implementations like Truffle Ruby as well. For example, when we listen to OptTruffle, why the talk about why OptCarrot becomes 9 times faster than MRI, it's also mentioning about instance variable access optimization. So in OptCarrot benchmark, it's very important to optimize instance variable because it's very intensively calling the instance variables or accessing that. But on the other hand, in Rails, it's not super intensive to access the same or a lot of instance variables in a single method. And also, I'd like to mention that the same method isn't called many times in a single request. And instead, we use a lot of methods in a single request instead of using some set of small number of methods to be called intensively. On the other hand, OptCarrot has two major very intensive methods calls. Like one is a render pixel because we need to render a lot of pixels on the screen for running Famicom emulator. Because of that, the method is almost always cached on CPU caches, but in Rails, because we change the methods to be called continuously, we cannot cache everything, or usually cache is just evicted from CPU cache, and therefore every single method call for hotspots are usually slower than not jitted version because of that. And so I think that's my understanding of the difference between OptCarrot and Rails application.
It sounds kind of like you're arguing that, or you're saying that a high ratio of instance variables to method calls, right? Like sort of
yep.
OptCarrot. Yep. Okay, sweet. Well, that actually answers one of my questions, because I was definitely going to ask you. I have a pretty intensive instance variable style, but where I use a lot of instance variables and then memoization to like create virtual properties on objects, right? But that's still a low ratio of instance variables to methods, so that's not really going to benefit from that kind of optimization.
Well, I think every instance variable access could be kind of benefited from that. But to see the very big difference, like obscured, we need to have a lot of method instance variables in a single method. But I think even when there are two or instance variable access, like memorization, I think it can become faster if the method itself is called many times.
Gotcha. Yep. Oh, I think, and I think that's kind of my point, where I have a lot of methods and I'm really only calling them a few times. Mm-hmm. But okay. So there were some things that you talked about in the article that you sent over that you wrote in December or whatever. Some things that hadn't been implemented at that time. So specifically, I'm thinking you talked about kind of C methods not being implemented. And I was kind of thinking this probably meant things like probably like enumerables methods, anything that like I would go to like the Ruby source code and I click on show source and it like shows me some C code. Probably all of those methods are what we're talking about here. Is that correct? Let me quote your article directly and see if that'll help.
A bit about the methods like the .0.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess, yeah. Because you were talking about in your talk that .0 is a C method, and then you converted it to Ruby in order to try and test your solution.
Okay. So at least we have some progress on Ruby 3.0 about for the zero method. So zero method is an integer zero method, zero question method to verify receiver integer is zero or not. Many of the Ruby core methods or core class methods are implemented as a C code, and therefore JIT compiler cannot usually easily analyze what the method is doing. And therefore, one way to optimize such kind of C code to be inlined or doing optimization on that is a way. One way is to just write it in Ruby, because we know virtual machine of the Ruby interpreter, and it's easier to analyze Ruby virtual machine's bytecode than the C native code. That has a problem as well. Like when we just replace the C code to Ruby bytecode, it runs slower on the virtual machine, because we need to access a virtual machine stack pointer and program counter or doing whatever overhead to run virtual machine. So instead of just changing C code to Ruby code, that was actually one of my experience to run zero question method faster. But I wanted to make sure virtual machine doesn't run slower when we introduce JIT compiler, or do some optimization on JIT compiler doesn't impact virtual machine. So I wanted to just add metadata to methods of which are implemented in C code. For example, zero question method is implemented in C code, but I wanted to add the metadata like this method is safe to be inline by JIT compiler. And indeed, we already added the attribute to the Ruby core, I guess, it's in this month or last month. And when we need to annotate the method, we would need to have the annotation declaration when we define the C-based method. But C language is not good at doing annotations or implementing DSL. So one of the virtual machine implementation people, Koichi, introduced a way to annotate such methods. First of all, Koichi talked about implementing core methods with using Ruby in the Ruby KDE 2019, but that was about implementing or calling the native, C-based function can be called from Ruby core Ruby-based methods when we use the mechanism which is implemented by Koichi. And we started to use that from 2.7 implementation. And when we do that, we can define Ruby core methods using Ruby, like declare class integer and def a zero question. And then inside the zero question method definition, we call the C function using prefixing special prefix called primitive. So when we primitive dot int zero p, which is a name of the C function, we can call the C function from the Ruby method when we define that in which is called a BTM method, but which is kind of private to Ruby core. So people, users can't use the built-in or primitive prefix. But anyway, we can call the C code in a very efficient way from the Ruby virtual machine. And therefore, we can safely or without spoiling the virtual machine performance, we can translate the C-based method definition to the Ruby-based method definition, still calling the method body or still implementing the method body as C code. So when we translate the C-based method definition to Ruby-based method definition, we have some rooms to define DSL there. So, and indeed, we implemented the DSL in the Ruby 3.0 for annotating the inline, whether the method is safe for inlining or not. And when we add the inline attribute to the method, this can safely inline the method in a caller of the integer there method. And then the method call overhead goes away. And therefore, zero question method call becomes as fast as equal zero, which is optimized, specially optimized by virtual machine. But for optimizing the such kind of special equal thing, we need to define one single virtual machine optimized instruction to virtual machine. But it's not scalable to into a virtual machine instruction for each individual Ruby method to be optimized. So virtual machine can't easily optimize the zero question method. But on the other hand, virtual machine cannot easily optimize the zero question method, but JIT compiler can do that because we don't need to have a special virtual machine instruction for optimizing zero question method. So instead of adding the optimized virtual machine instruction, we now can add the attribute, which is inline for each method to be optimized for optimizing away the method call overhead. So these days we are converting the C-based method definition to Ruby-based method definition and adding inline attribute to some of the methods like kernel class. So when we call the self.class, it's called in the kernel class method. And now JIT compiler can remove the method call overhead from the class method call. And then whenever we call class method, when the method is JIT compiled, it becomes faster now. And so that's one thing I implemented in Ruby 3.0. And is that what you were curious or?
Kind of. So I found the section in the article, so I can more or less quote you directly. So, but we did get to inlineable things. I was asking like what things that you wanted to inline. So in December you said, hey, I wanted to add all the super methods. I want to add all these C methods, and then I want to inline Ruby methods with local variables. So those are sort of your three major points. And I was just kind of curious, since that was back in December, like, are we farther along? I was just kind of wondering what you had done so far and, you know, how that was going.
There are multiple things to be in line with JIT compiler, and I also have some progress on that as well. So the major things I want to currently inline are, one is a usual method call, and like a usual method call. And the other thing is super, used by when we write super, and also yield, and also attribute reader or attribute writer are different kinds of methods, and also dot call, like proc call, are also different kind of method call. And also Ruby-based method and C-based method. So that's kind of combined with other types of method, like super can be used for Ruby method and C-based method. And so there are also different things. And yield can also call the C-based block may not exist, but anyway, Ruby-based methods. So we need to support both Ruby-based inlining and C-based method inlining. And also that needs to be supported in usual method call and super and yield. Also, another thing which is not method call is constant access. And currently, JIT compiler doesn't perform any constant or inline constant. So I'm going to at least experiment that during this Ruby 3.0 development. But anyway, that's one of the targets to be inline. So the progress is that in Ruby 2.7, I implemented method inlining for usual method call with a Ruby-based method. And so that's already done. But the problem is, it's a little bit harder to decide whether the method is should be inline or not, because when we inline methods in other methods, it increases code size. So it's not good for the CPU cache. So currently, the way we decide whether a method is inline or not is checking if a method is pure or not. And that pure means that it doesn't perform side effect or doesn't call arbitrary method. For example, in the Ruby interpreter implementation, there is a C function called rbfunCall, which is a method call from using the receiver and the method name. And when there is a rbfunCall, we need to be careful that what happens inside the rbfunCall, because Ruby is too dynamic that we can replace the method to be called in the rbfunCall. So basically, we can't assume this method is called in this place. So we need to be sure that this method doesn't never call rbfunCall. So when we can analyze this method doesn't call rbfunCall, we can inline the, or we can consider the method as pure, and therefore it's safe to eliminate the Ruby methods stack frame. So in Ruby 2.7, I added method inlining implementation for Ruby based method usual method call, but it's applied to some very basic methods. And so inlining can happen for that, but all other types are not supported yet, was not supported in the Ruby 2.7, and also some more dynamic kinds of methods cannot be inlined in the Ruby 2.7 because of the inlining decision. Ruby 3.0, I introduced some progress for other types of methods, and one is super. So for introducing the method inlining, we need to be sure that this single method entry is called in this super method. And for doing that, we need to have an inline cache, which has the information of that very particular method entry. And prior to Ruby 2.7, we didn't have such inline cache in the virtual machine. And so we cannot know which method entry is used by the virtual machine. So in 3.0 development, we added the inline cache for super call. So even in virtual machine, now we optimize the super call in virtual machine. But the thing is, we now have the single, JIT compiler can know which method entry is called by this line of the super call. And therefore, now JIT is ready to inline the super call, at least for Ruby method, Ruby-based definition. I already have a patch to inline the super call using the Ruby-based method definition, but because it's kind of, implementation is a little bit complicated or need to hard code some virtual machine internals. So currently it's not committed yet, but it's almost ready, or at least we have a progress, or we are ready to introduce such inlining for super. And for yield, I experimented that in yield inlining, and at least it has an inline cache for yields. So I think we are ready to implement that as well. But because some implementation are different between usual method call and super and yield, inlining yield also complicates JIT compiler's implementation as well. So I need to refactor some virtual machine implementation to make it simpler in JIT implementation. So it's almost ready, but not implemented or committed yet. That's mainly for the Ruby-based method definition discussion. And the other thing, C-based method definition has also a progress. So for when we call a C-based method from a usual method call or whatever, we have an inline cache, which is specialized for C-based method call. The inline cache or the function called by the inline cache has various things to be done inside the function, and it's a bit complicated. And I wanted to simplify the inline cache optimization of the virtual machine so that we do not inline too much code in the JIT code, so that we don't bloat the CPU cache. And so I simplified the function called by the C-based method inline cache, and now it's ready in the master branch of the Ruby. And so it's one step further for C-based method inlining, but the actual part inlining the C function definition to the actual JITted code isn't ready yet, because we need to know the definition of the C code of the method, and which is not difficult, but for doing that, we need to have all the method definition to be inlined in the header, C code header used by the JIT compiler. And it's a bit of the work for making the C code ready for doing that. So I also need to work on that. Technically, everything is not blocked by anything, but we just need time to implement that. And it's just that right now.
Are you building applications with Vue.js? Then you need to check out the Views on Vue podcast. Every week, we bring in a guest panelist from the Vue community and talk about the interesting things being built with Vue or the changes coming in its ecosystem. You can find it all at viewsonvue.com.
Yeah, no problem. Are you expecting that these classes of improvements are going to have large effects on these benchmarks? That, you know, up till now, I guess JIT hasn't been like way better than non-JIT, right? So are you expecting this to change that?
So I'm thinking about that as a groundwork, rather. Like inlining could have some improvements for some minor cases like zero question method calls. But the more important thing is we want to know what kind of code is running on this method. And for doing that, we need to have a capability for inlining methods, inlining method calls in every single method call in one single method which you want to optimize. So when we have a inlining capability for all types of method calls, JIT compiler can know what kind of things are being done in the one single method which are trying to be optimized. And once we have that capability, we can unblock many optimization, like create object using this method call. We can analyze this object created by this method call is not used by anywhere else, and therefore we can allocate the object on stack. And for allocating the stack, we also need to replace the allocation implementation used inside the method. So inlining is also needed for replacing the implementation for internal works like object allocation or everything else or whatever needed for optimization. So my understanding is that inlining blocks other optimization, and that may have further or bigger impact, but inlining itself doesn't have a big impact or major impact like what Truffle Ruby does. And or even just inlining Ruby methods can just increase the code size, and therefore if we do not have a good optimization strategy on the inline very big chunk of the method, it might end up just increasing the code size and making it slower. So inlining itself is sometimes useful for minor places like zero question method calls, but for other places who are unblocking further major optimization, which is very important, or it's a prerequisite for other major optimizations.
What's your opinion on Truffle Ruby?
So I think it's, from my understanding of what I heard of the Truffle Ruby from presentations like from by Chris Seaton or other Truffle members, I think it's the design or implementation design is better. Like, so the very difficult thing in C Ruby is that many methods are implemented in C code, and therefore it's hard to analyze what it's doing and hard to optimize that. But on the other hand, Truffle Ruby defines many Ruby methods as a Ruby-based definition, and so it can analyze that as a bytecode. And also another thing is Truffle Ruby has a way to analyze C-based method call as well. Like it integrates LLVM, and even if it already has Graal, it also integrates LLVM to analyze the C-based method definition using LLVM IR, converting C function to LLVM IR. So, and now Graal can optimize LLVM IR and Ruby-based bytecode together. So it can do a lot of optimization combining them. And that's a very better part of the than compared to C Ruby. But in CV, doing the same thing is kind of hard because that's mainly because it's not that simple. Like, even if we want to analyze the C-based function using LLVM, things like RBFunCore blocks the optimization because it needs to know everything in the virtual machine state and method definition and inline caches. So it's almost impossible, or at least it's not, right now it's not feasible to inline everything needed for optimizing the C-based method of CDB cores. So at least we need to change C-based method definitions to what can be optimized very well by LLVM. And that's right now blocking the such kind of optimization, which TruffleRuby does. So in my understanding, TruffleRuby is very well designed. So if you want to try that, you go ahead and you just use that. And I think if it works for you, I think it's a good idea. But why I'm doing CDB is for different purposes, like because TruffleRuby has a way to optimize the startup time by ahead of time compiler, using ahead of time compiler to generate a native binary from Ruby methods. But usually, or when we just run a Ruby-based method, TruffleRuby needs some more time for start making it ready for startup or warming up the code to be jitted. So when we, for example, when we run gem install or bundle install, it seems that it takes more time than CDB because CDB becomes almost ready when we call method only once. And from second call, it reaches the top speed when we are not using JIT. So it's kind of useful for me that gem install runs faster than TruffleRuby. And so development experience is right now better than TruffleRuby. So I want to balance the developer experience in the local very small command execution, and also optimize the long-running program by introducing JIT compiler. So that's my understanding between Truffle and JIT compiler.
So are those competing desires of the quick speed up, spin up and execution and the long term? And is that going to result in a compromise of where you're sitting on a benchmark that's kind of in the middle on both of those? Or, yeah, kind of curious about that.
I think technically, CRuby could achieve the very ideal performance of the such benchmarks. But the problem is we also need to take care of the maintainability of the CRuby core. So we can't introduce every very sophisticated technique to CRuby, which other maintainers can't maintain. So for example, I experimented to use LLVM in CRuby in 2016 or so. But Mats at least didn't like the idea. Like it adds a build dependency to CRuby. So Mats liked the way to JIT compile the method by using existing C compiler because it doesn't complicate the build dependency. And also, I also like that because when we don't use LLVM, we don't need to follow the LLVM major upgrades, and also debugging can be easy because when we compile the C code to native method, we have debugging information provided by the C method. But when we JIT compile method by ourselves, we need to implement debugging capability by ourselves. So maintaining the current way to JIT compile the Ruby method is a bit easier to maintain than all other very sophisticated way. But when it's for TruffleRuby or other Oracle stuff, it's not a problem because there are many people maintaining that kind of very sophisticated things. But in the Ruby CRuby, JIT compiler developer is only basically me, and other people are doing the virtual machine optimizations. And even for virtual machine optimization, there are multiple people, but like three or four people who are doing it on full time for work. So we don't have a lot of people to maintain the functionality. So basically, the design of the current CRuby JIT is making it easy to maintain, like sharing the virtual machine implementation as much as possible so that we don't duplicate implementation, and also we don't need to hardcore native code generation in JIT compiler a lot, because otherwise we need to be careful when we implement or change the virtual machine. And currently, when we add the virtual machine instruction to virtual machine, JIT doesn't need to be changed because JIT can automatically generate a JIT compiler imputation for a new virtual machine instruction. So that's one of the design of the current JIT compiler. And I think it's not done by other, or maybe at least the design different in other JIT compiler implementation out there. And so if we keep such kind of way to maintain it easier, we may need to compromise a performance sometimes. And so if we can have infinite time for making it efficient for such kind of easy to maintain way to implement JIT compiler, we can probably achieve the very efficient performance without spoiling maintainability. But it requires a lot of time for balancing these things. So I think that's a trade-off, like trade-off between time and the maintainability and performance.
Well, yeah, that's very insightful. And what I caught onto that was that, you know, you've got the very sophisticated methods with a bunch of people maintaining that, definitely understand that. And then, but then again, going back to the production performance versus the running a quick script every once in a while, could that be as simple since the VM can easily create bytecode, from my understanding, from what you just said there? Could it be as simple as in production, you just run the JIT flag, and in development, you don't run the JIT flag? Or is that completely naive?
Well, could be one of the use cases, but one of the problems in that could be if you don't test JIT in local at all, JIT's only problem could happen in production. So I don't recommend it. But anyway, currently JIT doesn't support trace point support. So when we enable trace point in local development, it just turns off JIT compiler. So anyway, it turns off JIT compiler. But so it's off topic anyway. So I think it's sort of legitimate to enable such kind of very sophisticated way to optimize that. But I don't want to degrade the virtual machine performance for existing usages and people who don't use JIT at all for some reasons, like there's no C compiler on the runtime. So I want to maintain the virtual machine performance as well. So in that case, the startup startup speed isn't impacted by whether we enable JIT or not, because if we don't change the virtual machine implementation or don't change C-based method to Ruby-based method, the virtual machine performance isn't impacted by whether JIT is enabled or not. So the reason why Travel Ruby becomes slower in bytecode-based execution is it's traversing the AST or tree for interpreting the program. But on the other hand, Ruby has a bytecode-based interpreter. So interpreter or base level performance is better than Travel Ruby, I think. So that's why CRuby can faster in a startup, and it isn't affected by whether we enable JIT flag or not. So even if you enable JIT in local development, you can have almost the same benefit in the startup time as well.
That's fascinating.
So I saw a random thing somewhere. I think it was in your talk, because I couldn't find it in the article that you linked, at least, about maybe we can stop using performance cops, which of course got me immediately very excited. So my question is, does this, are there specific cops that you're thinking of? I was kind of thinking about, like, is this going to end the age-old argument, which is kind of defunct but keeps coming back, about double-quoted strings versus single-quoted strings? I mean, is that just... Are some of those things going to go away, like the things that we have fights over, right? Or is it just like, it's just going to hang around?
Yeah, at least I hope to remove such kind of discussion for micro optimizations, because that's what JIT should do for you. And so at least it's still in scope of the JIT compiler project. For example, if we can analyze this single string retail isn't used anywhere else, and in that case, we can just allocate the string beforehand instead of allocating it every time. And so for doing that, we need to analyze the Ruby method or every method used in the method. So we at least need to know what methods around that is doing. And so, like I said before, I'm annotating methods like inline. And when I'm trying also to add the under attributes, like this doesn't escape object to another trace. And if you have such annotation for more methods, core class methods, we can say that this string retail isn't used or escaped or to other places. So in that case, we can allocate that beforehand. And I'd say it's in progress to implement that kind of capability. And I'm looking forward to emulating such performance scopes for just add this dot freeze or frozen string retail to Pragma. And other examples are like zero question methods. So one ticket was raised from other contributors or people. And so that thing was zero question method is slower than equal equal zero. And that could be one of the things which Rubikov performance scopes are doing or suggesting. And that kind of things can be easily achieved by inlining the zero question method by JIT compiler. So at least I'm hoping to eliminate such kind of necessity for performance scopes. But one problem could be that currently Ruby 3.0 compiles only 100 methods, so up to maximum. But increasing that may degrade the performance by bloating the CPU cache. So it can fix the problem only for hot spots. So if the number of methods to be compiled by JIT compiler is good enough for your application, you can stop worrying about performance scopes. But otherwise, we may need to improve JIT compiler to be able to compile more things without spoiling performance so that we can compile methods like hundreds, thousand methods or millions of methods if you need it. So yeah, that's the thing. That's the way to go, I think.
So it sounds like we're going to have to become better at handling performance in our own apps. Even with JIT, you just have to own that.
Well, it's up to your application. Like, I think at least if the place is not a hotspot, you shouldn't be too much worried about the micro optimization, and you should just stop doing that kind of non-important work. But at least for very important places in the application, this should be taking care of that for yourself automatically. So for very intensive places, you don't need to at least spoil the code quality for intensive methods. For example, if you have a very intensive endpoint in your API application, when you want to optimize that, you may change the code to very ugly things so that it can run faster. But at least that kind of thing shouldn't need to be done, or at least should be obviated. So that's one of the things it could do for yourself, for you, obviously. And yeah, at least that's possible. And for a long time, it needs to be better for handling everything for you, I think.
Anything else you guys are thinking about?
Yeah, I'm just curious about, this is a big job. This is a big job. I think we can all agree. And it's a very difficult work. What made you decide to try and tackle this problem? Because this is a very hard problem. We touched on Truffle Ruby. Oracle says they spent millions and millions on their development. What motivates you to take on this challenge?
So prior to JIT compiler development, I was sort of maintaining the template engines like ERB or HAML, and I was very interested in optimizing the template engine performance, and I did lots of performance improvements, like making ERB 2 times faster or making HAML 5 times faster. And I was already satisfied with the performance benefit in the template engines, or there is no major improvements which can be done in the template engines area already. So I was done for optimizing the template engines. And I was curious to optimize such performance further. What can we do? And then I was interested in optimizing the Ruby internals instead, because in a bytecode level, the optimization is already done. Sorry, everything is done for template engines, but for in a bytecode level. But for making it faster, I thought we need to make Ruby internals faster. And usually we should optimize virtual machine for improving the Ruby's performance, but we haven't done JIT compiler for Ruby CDB yet. And some experiments had been done for CDB, but none of them was committed to the Ruby master. And the motivation or the time, which time when I considered to try JIT compiler was Ruby Kaigi 2014 or 15, which was hosting the talk of the Evan Phoenix that was talking about LLVM, integrating LLVM to optimize Ruby CRuby further, because Ruby core is implemented in C code a lot, and LLVM can inline such kind of, or inline and optimize such kind of C-based method by using LLVM IR. So that motivated me, or the talk was very fascinating or like insightful, or sorry, that talk was good. And so I was impacted by that talk, and I was interested in trying LLVM with JIT compiler, and then I implemented LLVM-based JIT compiler for CRuby, and I found that's not super efficient or that needs more work to be done. So I started to continue to work on lots of more things on that.
Well, I think it's very it's exciting work, and I think we all know that this can be a lot faster. It's just the very awkward problem of not being able to start optimizing because you can't tell if methods can be aligned or not. Yep. So this is the kind of fundamental barrier that needs to be solved. Yes. And I'm excited. I'm looking forward to my Sinatra and Rails servers being twice as fast. Mm-hmm. I seriously think that's an achievable goal. Would you agree?
In the long term, or if we spend the correct investment on that, I think, depending on the application, but it's feasible in some of the types of the applications. Like if we, the endpoints are the single query is dominating the performance, it's not optimizable. But at least when Ruby is doing work in a Ruby layer, that could be two times faster if we implement valid optimization on that, I think.
Is it frustrating when you find an optimization in Ruby for JIT, and then the MRI team steal your optimization and make the MRI faster? So then the JIT is faster as well, but it's not relatively faster.
You mean the virtual machine of the CDB, right?
Mm.
So if such kind of thing can happen for one optimization, it's not for JIT to be implemented, and that should rather be implemented in virtual machine. So actually, I sometimes optimize virtual machine because when I got the idea to improve JIT performance, I think about the design, and if it's more suitable for virtual machine, I just implement it in virtual machine. So everything which I implemented in JIT compiler is at least easier to implement in JIT compiler, or it's sometimes impossible to be implemented in virtual machine. For example, we can't eliminate the method call frame because otherwise virtual machine can't know what bytecode to be executed. So it's something exclusive for JIT compiler. And so I think that kind of problem doesn't happen.
All right. Do we have any more things that we want to ask about, or should we move on into PICs?
Back when functional programming was making its resurgence, I found it really interesting that a lot of people were moving over there, and it almost felt like it was on hype. And I didn't really understand the power of functional programming until I learned Elixir. Elixir is a functional programming language. It's built on the Erlang virtual machine, and it really does some interesting things and makes you build apps in a different way. But what's really fascinating about it is the speed of the applications, the ability to distribute work easily, and just how it manages the functional programming and all of the nice things about it, so that you don't have to worry about side effects and a lot of the other things that come out of functional programming. Plus, pattern matching in Elixir is a killer feature. If you're looking for a new language that you want to learn that is going to make a difference for you and give you the opportunity to challenge some of your thinking and find a new way of doing it, Elixir is a great way to go. And we have a podcast now on Elixir called Elixir Mix, and you can find that at elixirmix.com.
I will take that silence as a we should move on into picks. Luke, would you like to get us started on picks today?
I would, and because we have Kakuguma-san with us, I have a Japanese Ruby pick, and the pick is a book by Yusuke Endo, and the English title is The World of Transcendental Programming You Don't Know. This book is in Japanese, and there's a talk to go with it that I think was at one of the Ruby Kaigi talks. This is a book about writing useless programs. This is not my review of it. This is what the description says. And it's about programming as art. The guy's done the C obfuscated code competition a few times. It's only available in Japanese. And I will have to send the link in because I can't actually copy paste it properly into the show notes. But you can buy it online. If you go to amazon.co.jp, you can buy it as a Kindle book and you can make your way through it. And it's quite beautiful. So there we go. The World of Transcendental Programming You Don't Know by Yusuke Endo.
Sweet. Thanks, Luke. Matt, do you have any for us this week?
I'm also going to pick a book, but something that's much more accessible, at least to myself. And I went back and reread All the Pretty Horses by Cormac McCarthy, which was always one of my favorites. Never seen the movie, so I can't comment there. But the book is fantastic, so that's my pick for today.
Hey, no problem. So continuing on, because, you know, that's how life works. I've been working more on my parsing of rule sets or whatever, and I needed to basically make this more accessible to non-technical users. And so I was going to sleep one night and I was like, oh, you know what? I can just basically show the entire AST as a graph and then they can go and troubleshoot anything that's wrong or whatever when they make their rules and then things don't work like they thought. So I was then trying to make this graph show up on a page and I encountered Go.js and I actually walked away pretty impressed. I was able to make some pretty sweet graphs that we're able to kind of communicate an AST to people who don't even know what an AST is. So it was pretty sweet. So loved it. Takashi, do you have anything for us?
I have a couple of Nintendo Switch games for a pick. One is Animal Crossing, which is released this year. And because of the coronavirus, shelter in place was implemented and we can't go out easily now. So I enjoy go outside inside the game by Animal Crossing. And also, the last time I played Animal Crossing was like 10 years ago, so kind of refreshing memory of that old age, and so it was enjoyable by that reason. The other thing is Ring of Fire Adventure, because we can go outside and go to gym because it's closed, and so I'm just trying to get it and refreshing the page to buy it with a normal price. So I still haven't played it that actually yet, but I'm trying to get it right now. That's the thing.
Nice. Well, Takashi, thank you for coming on and talking to us for a little while. If people wanted to follow you or find out more about you or what you're doing in the future after this, where can they go? Do you have a Twitter? I mean, I believe you have a GitHub. What would you recommend?
GitHub commits or my... Sometimes I tweet progress on Twitter by English. Usually I say things in Japanese, but when we talk about JIT compiler, I usually try to talk in English. So if you follow me, I think you can get the latest upgrade and latest progress. And I also publish a Medium blog yearly. So after Ruby 3.0 is released, I think I'm going to publish blog posts. So you can read it when it's released, I think.
Okay, awesome. And we have the links to your Twitter and GitHub, so we'll get those in the show notes. All right, yeah. Thank you again for coming. Thanks, everybody, for coming today.
Let's go with some of this.
All righty. We'll go ahead and wrap it up there. Have a great day.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.